And if I look at the person I was 4 years ago compared to the person that I am now, and then again the person I will be in another 4 years, a completely different person. You have to be open to taking on feedback to grow.
Welcome to the 39ers Podcast, a podcast by Business SA. This podcast will dive deep into the people and businesses that drive the change in South Australia. The 39ers are a community of forward-thinking, high-achieving business leaders aged 40 and under, creating a think tank of ideas, inspiration and opportunity that will shape the future of South Australia and beyond. This show is a gateway to the captivating stories, the inspiring journeys and the insightful conversations with some of South Australia's best and brightest minds in business who are shaping our state. I'm Tim Leavis and I'm from Business SA. So I'm genuinely looking forward to talking with our guest today, an industry leader in workforce development with years of experience, a strong believer in mentoring and personal growth, a huge supporter of women in business, someone who is passionate about our great state and wanting to make a long-term impact. Welcome, State Manager of Mass National, Kara Pritchard. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, it's great to have you here. And first of all, we'll just start about MAS and MAS National. Tell us about who you work with.
Yeah, awesome. So I've worked for MAS National for quite a few years now, an amazing organisation. Our vision is to create vibrant futures. And we do that through many different elements of the business. So we are an apprenticeship network provider, which no one ever knows what that means. But if you want to sign up an apprentice or trainee, we come out and do that for you. And we work with you, work with your business, help you understand how that works. We're also a Workforce Australia provider, which means that we work with people who are currently unemployed and we support them into employment through different activations and things that we do working with them. We also run a team called MAS Careers, and what the careers team do is they work with students and different people who are looking to learn more about apprenticeships, traineeships and career pathways, and they provide them that information and guidance on what a career in that particular industry would look like, but also talk to them around what interests them, what drives them, what would be suited to them as an individual. We also run programs where we work with disadvantaged youth, so people who've been affected by generational unemployment, people who haven't had someone maybe get behind them and truly believe in them and give them that buy-in. And we run different programs where we use different tools to engage. So sitting people in a classroom, a bit boring.
Yep.
You're not going to get that engagement. You're not going to build that trust. You're not going to build that rapport. But engaging with people on something that interests them, so whether that be through sport or fitness or through bike riding, there's these other elements where there's teamwork involved. There's the ability to support, connect, talk about mental health, build that rapport, but also to have those conversations around, well, hey, you've got the hang of the teamwork over here. How would that look in an employment space? And how we can then connect them with different employers that we work with to give them that opportunity to move into employment. Because at MAS, we believe that supporting someone into meaningful employment, and then once someone's in meaningful employment, not just changes their life, but it changes the life of their family, their friends, their community, and it creates that vibrant future. Because once you have a job, you have an income.
Yep.
Once you have an income, you can make decisions. And that's really powerful. And at the end of the day, everything we do relates back to creating vibrant futures.
Wow. That's very powerful. Very powerful indeed. And it sounds like you're in everything. There's a lot of things that MAS National is part of. So how does your role as state manager play a part in all this?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to work with really amazing group of team members. So we have quite a large team here in South Australia across all those different programs. So we've got, I think it's about 150 people here in SA. Yeah. And we also have obviously team members interstate as well. I'm really lucky just to be on the journey with them. We have some really passionate people who are really good at what they do. And, you know, my role is to work with them and look at what their strengths are and help them play to those strengths so that they can be successful and they can feel empowered to do their job, ultimately helping and supporting and growing this great state of ours.
That's fantastic. And the story you told me earlier was around how you landed the role. Do you want to tell me that again? Because I thought that was fascinating. You started in Melbourne, is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm an Adelaide girl and moved to Melbourne in my early 20s and was there for 10 years and was working for MAS in Melbourne, which was great. Told mum and dad I was going to Melbourne for 1 year, ended up being there for 10. So it got to the point where it was time to come home. And I think mum would have come and, you know, dragged me home had I not come home eventually. And I'd sort of said to my, I don't think he was my husband at the time, but my now husband, you know, maybe in the future we can move back to Adelaide. And, you know, it was kind of like a 5 year, 10 year, when we weren't really sure when it was going to happen. Yep. And I mentioned it to my CEO and, you know, I might have even mentioned it over a glass of wine. I'm not sure, you know, when this conversation actually had happened. But the following Monday, he sort of said, hey, look, there's this opportunity for state manager role in South Australia. Next minute, I was the state manager of South Australia. Didn't really know how to be a state manager or what that involved, but I just said, yep, that sounds amazing.
Great.
Called my husband, said, do you want to move back to Adelaide? Because we are. And he said, yep, sounds great.
Fantastic.
And we were here 3 months before the pandemic.
Yep. So 3 months you've moved from out of Melbourne. you said it was a small little apartment.
Yep.
And you've moved to Adelaide.
Yeah.
And then obviously lockdown occurred thereafter. Oh,
yeah. Timing was incredible. And it probably really helped shape moving back into South Australia as well, because you know, and you probably shouldn't say this on a South Australian podcast for the 39ers, but I was really involved in Victoria. I was quite, you know, quite happy in Melbourne. And I like that busy lifestyle. I like the way that business moved. I liked the way things happened really quickly. And when I first came back to Adelaide, I remember thinking like, this is harder than I thought it would be because it's different. And things are done differently and things don't maybe happen as quickly as what I'm used to them happening. And there wasn't maybe as much diversity in my industry. There was probably a lot of older males in senior roles and I was having trouble getting meetings because I think it was different.
Yep.
And I remember saying to one of my close girlfriends, don't know what I've done, like I'm a bit frustrated. And she said, yeah, I hear what you're saying. And she'd lived interstate for quite a period of time too, but she was back in Adelaide. And I said, you know, maybe I've made the wrong decision here. And I said, you know, the shop shut early, like little silly things, the shop shut early, or I can't get cut through as quickly as what I would like to, and you know, there's not as many high rises. Like, who cares if there's not as many high rises? But clearly it bothered me at the time. And I must have said, oh, this isn't happening in Adelaide, or this isn't happening in Adelaide.
Yeah.
And she was really profound and she said, so make it happen. Why don't you make it happen? If people from Adelaide don't make it happen, who's going to make it happen? And I think about that a lot because it was one of those moments that made me go, yeah, let's make it happen. And look, since then, connected with all of these amazing people who were making it happen. It was happening.
Yep.
I just wasn't aware of it. And I had to change my mindset. And ever since then, it's just been this amazing journey.
It's a fantastic story there that you talk about. And I want to go back to that first decision that you made, which was around there you were, business development.
Yeah,
and you get tapped on the shoulder to be a state manager. You said just then didn't have any experience at all, didn't know what it entailed at all. What a lot of people in your position would have gone, oh no, I can't do that. I'm not good enough. No. What made you to step up then and go, no, actually, you know what? I've got this.
I have always been a bit of a just say yes person, and you can work the rest out later. And I think that was sort of how I approached it. And if I look at the person I was 4 years ago compared to the person that I am now and then again the person I will be in another 4 years, a completely different person. You have to be open to taking on feedback to grow. So many decisions I've made have been wrong. So many. And I have a CEO who's a really, really incredible man, and he just had this belief. And I think that also drove me. I think that he is a really empowering leader who has taught me to play to my strengths, and maybe the things that are my weaknesses, we can work with others to have, because that's their strength and they can undertake those particular tasks or whatever it is. And that if I'm authentic and I play to what my strengths are, then I will continue to grow. And with that, the business will grow, our team members will grow. Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, which is clearly not over. And I have a lot of learning to continue doing.
And it's great to recognize that you're learning, but obviously if we pause it for the moment and say, wow, you know, what a journey you've had. You've come to Adelaide 4 years ago. How many were in the Adelaide team or the Adelaide group at that stage? How many did you have then?
We had 23 staff.
23. And you said how many now?
150.
150. So it's grown significantly. Yeah. There's also, you said the CEO's come to Adelaide
as well. Based in Adelaide now, which is really exciting.
So you're starting to get everyone to sort of base camp in Adelaide. Is that right?
Look, the organisation doesn't know it, but I refer to Adelaide as head office now. So hopefully no one from Victoria listens to this.
No, they won't. It's South Australian podcast, So, and with that, you know, driving everyone back into Adelaide and you coming back, you know, what's driven that for you?
I think I've been able to see the growth and success of our business happen right in front of my eyes. And I mean that in the least arrogant way possible, because like I said, we've made mistakes, we're not perfect, we continue to grow and learn. But there are people that 4 years ago didn't work for Maz in South Australia that may have worked for a competitor, may have worked elsewhere, who I probably had to convince to come work for us. And you know, there was a lot of convincing. It was, you know, I promise you we can take you on this journey. And maybe even walking out of some of those meetings thinking, oh, I'm really going to have to take them on that journey now, because I've really promised that this is where we're heading and this is what our future looks like. And then to have the privilege to work with those people and have them be part of our journey and see them also grow and be challenged and not look at things as the status quo and look for innovation. We work in an industry where, you know, apprenticeships and traineeships, they're not the most sexy thing. You know, employment participation, you know, people don't sort of go, wow, we know exactly what you do. We're not a Telstra or a BHP where people know what we do. So we have to take people on the journey, and we can't just walk into a meeting and say, hey, we're the best, you should work with us. We have to add value. And I've seen the team look at things and continue to look at things from a different angle and feel confident and empowered to make decisions, to do things differently, to try. If it doesn't work, that's okay. And I think that, you know, we come through our careers sort of being told you become a leader, you've got to get it right. Totally the wrong way to look at it, in my opinion. If you are lucky enough to be in a leadership role, you have to support your team members to make mistakes and go, that's okay. What did we learn from that? What have we learned today? And if we go into a situation again, how are we going to take that learning and move forward? And that empowers people. I think that's really exciting. And I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, you certainly did. Certainly did. And it speaks volumes of your leadership skills as well, Cara. You gloss over it quite a little there to say, you know, it's all them, it's all them, it's all them. But that's also you giving them the empowerment to do that. That is you actually allowing your team to make mistakes, which actually brings out the best. It's you putting the strengths and the people with the strengths in the right positions. It's a lot of you as well in there, I seem. And
Thank you.
I know that you are quite humble in that. What do you define as success for yourself then? What do you? And that was more about yourself than it is the business.
Okay, what do I define as success?
Yeah, how do you define it?
I'm really driven by growth. So I definitely, and you know, whether this is good or bad, my personal value is tied to how well I do. I'm very, which is probably what drives me. There's clearly some kind of value piece there in the background where I want to do well, impress, do a good job. So I think what drives me is seeing the growth on a page, seeing the revenue increase, seeing the amount of team members we have increase, but also seeing who have helped, seeing and hearing those stories. Sometimes as a leader, you can get really tied up in KPIs and targets and people stuff or a challenge that you're facing. And then you'll have a conversation where you talk to someone that our organization has provided education to or support to or helped them into employment and hear their story around how that's changed their life. And I'll give you an example. We run a women in business group called The Collective here in South Australia. So the purpose of The Collective is to empower women. And as part of it, we really wanted to have a networking group that wasn't specific to an industry. Because I think if you think of networking, with the exception of Business SA, obviously, but a lot of networking groups are, accountants or construction. It's very specific to the industry. We wanted to have a networking group that was open to all. Age, you could be an apprentice, you could be a trainee, you could be a CEO. We wanted to put those women in a room together and encourage and empower them by having these amazing speakers. And I've been lucky enough to work with people like Tammy Barton from My Budget, Hayley and Lauren from Adelaide, Kelly Jamison from Edible Blooms, these amazing women who've been so generous with their time, which I just really appreciate. And as part of that, we raise money and donate to Catherine House, who support women who've been affected by homelessness. So one Christmas, been in Adelaide for a couple of years, we'd raised a fair bit of money for Catherine House, and I was getting someone to, in one of the arcades, they wrap presents. And it was Catherine House volunteers, and you pay and they wrap your presents. So great, it's the best way to get your presents wrapped so you don't have to do them yourself. How amazing.
I do that every year.
Yeah, it's the best. Yeah. So good.
My wrapping's perfect then every
year. Absolutely, mine too. It's it's the best cheat. I hope everyone on here goes and supports Catherine House and gets their presents wrapped. Anyway, I got talking to the lady who was kindly wrapping the gifts, and she said, oh, what do you do? And I said, I work for a company called Maz National. And there was this moment where there was a recognition. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. Because quite often people don't know what Maz National means. And she said, Maz National, you actually donated some money as an organization, which paid for me to go to TAFE and undertake a Cert 4. And now I have employment.
Wow. How good's that?
It was like, I've never forgotten this moment. It was the most amazing moment. I could feel tears coming on. Yeah. And it was that genuine moment of actually helped someone. How amazing.
And it's that full circle moment of where you've actually been able to realize what it is and the impact that you've got for someone. And then hearing it back from them is just another layer. Yeah. That you go, yeah, I know I'm doing good, but here it is reality-wise.
Yeah, that was really special. And, there's thousands of apprentices and trainees that we've helped through different things, through mentoring, through support, through career advice that's helped them understand what pathway to take. But just to hear that story,
fantastic,
game changer.
That's great. And so then what's the legacy you're looking to leave, knowing that you've got an impact like that through the work that you've been able to do? What is it you're wanting to leave behind?
So I guess going back to what I was saying earlier around my girlfriend who sort of said, well, how about you be involved in building it?
Yeah.
I want to keep building it. I want, young women in South Australia to think I can have an amazing career and do amazing things here in South Australia. I want there to be more jobs in South Australia. I want more big businesses to have offices in South Australia, which means we've got more people here. We attract more people to the state. Ultimately, that means the state has more money to continue to grow and reinvest. And I think that if we can create that value proposition and maintain these amazing people who are already from South Australia in South Australia and attract other amazing people to our great state, we can continue to do amazing things and shine that spotlight on us as a state.
And that's a fantastic point there, is around that we've attracted all these great people. Mm. We've got it. Let's continue that momentum. Let's keep building that. Let's get that change that you're driving for and continue with that. So you spoke quite passionately about South Australia. You know, when we talk about the powers to be, what should we be talking to them about?
Appropriate education, making sure that career guidance is provided to all students across South Australia, whether they be in metropolitan South Australia or regional South Australia, educating them on all of the opportunities, all of the suites of opportunities. So the fact that there's university pathways, the fact that there's apprenticeship and traineeship pathways, the fact that there are other pathways into business that can give someone the opportunity to grow. And I think if we look at the things that are on the agenda at the moment from a political point of view, we've got the trade schools coming up. And I know a lot of the stuff I talk about is related to apprenticeships and traineeships. But I think that if we can provide people with appropriate career advice at a younger age, they can then go on to make educated decisions that potentially will give them a stronger and brighter future. And I think at the moment, or for many years, or in my experience, when I was in high school, which was a long time ago, definitely the 39ers, not the 29ers, there was a real focus on academia and the fact that university was the only pathway. And I think that that can at times mean that people could fall through the cracks. But if we give people that advice on the career pathways that are out there at a younger age, that's really going to help our state, because we have a major skill shortage. And, you know, there are ways to work around that in a creative way, but we need to start the conversation at a younger age. So that would be a priority for me.
Yeah. And you had a chance to speak to the Premier the other day
in
the 39ers event.
Yes.
Now, did you ask any questions there at all?
I did.
You know, can you recall what that was at all?
I can. I hit the Premier up around appropriate career advice for, you know, the schools, and they do have a strategy, and had a chat with him around what that strategy really looks like to him and his government, and how we as businesses can get behind their strategy and work with them to actually make sure that that's rolled out. And I think that, you know, people at times think that the government has to fix everything, but they're still just people. We have to get behind that strategy. We have to look at our recruitment piece differently. Big businesses have to look at, you know, big businesses that we work with, and I won't name them, but some really big clients of ours are now starting to look at the fact that university is not the only pathway into their business, whereas historically it has been. And that doesn't necessarily create diversity, because everyone's following the exact same pathway into their business. I'm not saying it's wrong, but if they are having challenges with their talent acquisition, what other ways can we be looking at entering into their businesses to create that workforce of the future?
And so with that is obviously changing their mindset, changing their style that they come into. And you know, we spoke about online applications at one stage earlier today, about how, you know, some people are needing an online application, but that may be totally different to what the job entails.
Absolutely. And, you know, diversity has become a buzzword and it gets talked about a lot. Ultimately, if we can remove the barriers so that there's equal opportunity for entry, then people will have an opportunity to do things that maybe they wouldn't have previously had that opportunity to do. And, you know, I think I was joking with you earlier around the fact that maths is just not my strong suit. Yep. Terrible at maths. And if you asked me, you know, if you said, hey, Cara, future opportunities for you to move into this senior leadership role, but you had to pass this maths test, even though I'd potentially have all the skills for the role, would not pass the math test. I'd probably run away. You'd never see me again. But if you remove those barriers and give people the opportunity to demonstrate their strengths, then potentially you will create a more diverse workforce.
And that is a mentality you're showing me, which is you're really thinking about the person in front of you and how you could actually get the best out of them again, but also as well for the collaboration with the business owners then, and the business is there to actually match this in, go, hey, look, you know, stop thinking that way. Let's give this person a try.
Yeah. I feel like one of the things that I have had to work on, and it was uncomfortable at the start of my leadership journey, but it is that you can't please everyone and you have to have honest conversations. And I think in business at times there's this fear that the client's always right and that you have to say yes. But there is so much power in having an honest conversation with a client around where their strategy is potentially not going to get them the outcome that they're looking for, and really setting honest boundaries so that you're not over-promising and under-delivering. And it's not easy because you work in an industry, or we work in an industry where, you know, we want to work with everyone.
Yep.
But potentially, if you don't have honest conversations around what the current playing field looks like, what the current economy looks like, you're just setting yourself up to fail. So there's so much power in having an honest and sometimes uncomfortable conversation, and it really can lead to some amazing outcomes.
And it would strengthen the relationship as well, because it becomes a trusting relationship. Then it's like, well, this is not possible. Yeah. This is what we see, you know, is the best possible way.
Absolutely.
They trust you more.
Yeah.
You know, and it starts, which, you know, you spoke about SA is hard to do business, especially when you come in. Well, those trusting relationships are so important.
Absolutely. You've got to build rapport and you have to work in partnership. I don't think any one of us can solve everyone's challenges. Got to work in partnership and collaboration. And if, you know, you're not the best person or your business isn't the best business to give that client the solution, then there's so much power in referring them to someone who is, because it just builds that trust and rapport. And it's a learned skill, because it can be uncomfortable at times.
It's funny how also as well that it comes back to you as well. That person may come back to you for your actual skill set that you can actually do as well, which is interesting. You touched on there with the 39ers event. You're a founding member of the 39ers. What drew you into this group?
It just, as soon as I saw, I think the first article about it, I thought, oh, that really interests me. And, you know, it ties back to wanting to be part of something that is going to change people's lives and connect and have a legacy, give back. And I remember reaching out to Kate. It's probably embarrassing. I just sort of contacted her out of the blue, said, you know, this really interests me. And it's just such a group of amazing people. The first meeting was quite funny, because it's kind of like that awkward first date where you're all sort of standing around not really knowing anything about anyone and not knowing what anyone's story is, but also knowing that some of the people in the room are very amazing. And I remember just feeling like a complete imposter. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I should be in this room. I'm not really sure. And even the first time we had to do a presentation, it was really funny. I was probably about 15th person to do the presentation, and everyone had done a really business-focused presentation.
Yes.
And I had done one slide on the business and then a slide on myself and my dog and how I enjoy true crime podcasts.
That's awesome.
And who I am as a person. And I remember sitting there for all of the presentations in front of me thinking, I've really got this wrong. And then it was actually really special, because it became a conversation starter.
Yep.
And it really just opened me up to all of these amazing people. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to already call upon some of the other 39ers for support and introductions. You know, Dan Franco has introduced me to some of his speakers from his podcast that are now going to be speaking at my collective events moving forward. So, yeah, very special group.
So obviously the connection there and collaboration, as we talk about as well. You spoke a little bit there about driving change and change for South Australia. Where do you see that happening with the 39ers?
A group of people is always going to be more powerful than one person. And I think when you're in this room of, you know, thought leaders and people who are connected and people who are listening and want to support, we're going to have this ability to potentially mentor others or work on some kind of project where we can help people who are coming into their careers and provide them maybe some learnings that we've had. They're obviously going to have their own learnings. We all do. It's how we grow. But if we can give back and do some good, potentially partnering with people that maybe haven't had the same opportunities that we've had, I think we can make some really exciting things happen.
It's something special, and I feel very privileged to sit across from the 39ers every week to do this. So I think you've summed it up very well there, Cara. Well
done.
So and you, I think you alluded to a little bit there as well about the billboard question as well that we present to you. So out of Tim Ferriss's book, A Tribe of Mentors, there's one of the questions he asked, which is if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, getting a message out to millions of people, you know, what would the statement be? What would the mantra be? What would the philosophy be? What does it look like for
absolutely.
You,
Absolutely. It would be authentically you. There is no one else who is you, and that is your superpower. It's probably a really long billboard.
That's okay. It goes for kilometres, so that's fine.
It's on the side of a freeway. Yeah. I think that just as the sort of saying is, you've got to be authentic. Because if you aren't authentic, or if you try to be what you think a leader should be or what you think a leader should look like, you're potentially not being your true self, and that will come across. And I think you can take learnings from others. You need to seek advice from others. It's so powerful to have mentors. But ultimately, who you are is really amazing. And taking that and growing and learning and continuing to be who you are and not try to be someone else is just so powerful.
And you showed it with your story about the 39ers, that first event. You were being very authentic then. You had one slide about the business, one slide about you and Millie the dog as
yeah,
well, by
Millie,
the sounds
yeah.
of it. Millie was in there as well.
She was.
And so that's showing you're leading from the front by being authentic.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that people work with people, people invest in people, and people buy from people. You don't necessarily buy from a particular business just because that's who the business is. You work with people, and you will make your decisions based on those trusted relationships. Now, if people are inauthentic, then there's no trust, there's no rapport. And I think that a lot of the time in our careers, we get told you should be this, you should be that, you should be good at this, you should be good at that. No, just be you. But take the learnings on your journey. Get the hard feedback. Sometimes feedback can be really painful.
Yep.
And I would encourage anyone to take feedback or ask for feedback, because it's that space of being uncomfortable that is ultimately going to help you continue to grow, but take the learnings and use them your own way.
That's fantastic. You spoke a little bit there about mentoring others.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anyone that you turn to advice for, or do you
Absolutely.
Have mentors? Or,
yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. I have quite a few different mentors. Actually, one of them probably doesn't even realise that I treat her as a mentor, probably. But I've been very lucky to have some really strong female leaders throughout my career who I've watched and have been able to turn to and ask questions. And I just think that's so powerful. And I have different mentors for different things. And I have mentors who are quite frank with me and will give me frank and fearless feedback. And I think that's so powerful. And, you know, I had one of my mentors say to me the other day, maybe you need to get out of your own way. And, you know, in the conversation, it was so relevant, and she hit the nail on the head. and has stuck with me over the last couple of weeks. Hey, hold on. Maybe I need to get out of my own way. And I just think that's so powerful. And to be able to give back as well, I also mentor some of our team members, some team members in different states. And a lot of it is just a conversation. I think people think, you know, you read all these business books and you think mentor is someone like Mark Boris or, you know, the founder of Netflix or all these sort of people who have had these incredible business journeys. You can have as many mentors as you want. You can be a mentor and a mentee, and there's just this ability to grow through those relationships.
And you probably actually learn a bit about yourself being a mentor for someone.
Absolutely.
As well as being a mentee. It actually shows you both angles.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And you have to, you know, one thing that I've really, really learned and I'm still trying to improve on is to not go into solution mode for them. Just to keep asking questions. And, you know, and sometimes I can see when my mentors are doing that to me. And you could, you know, I could see what you're doing. But you've got to be curious and you've got to ask why. Why did you make that decision? Okay, tell me about it. What did that look like for you? Because if you go straight into that solution mode, you're not necessarily helping that person grow. So, yeah, it's a really, really interesting space that I'm particularly passionate about. As part of the collective Inspiring Women in Business, we also have a mentoring platform.
Wow, okay.
So we have events. Yes. But through those events, we promote the platform. It's a free platform that we fund as a business. And people can hop on, register, create a profile. They can become a mentor, mentee, or both. And it means that we've potentially got people who are senior CEOs of organisations mentoring someone in Outback Queensland or Outback South Australia. And it breaks down that barrier of the fact that you have to be face-to-face or in a capital city. So it's something that I'm very passionate about.
How often are those events that you've got there?
Yeah. So in South Australia, we have a couple a year. When we first started doing them, we were doing them bi-monthly and on top of everything else, very hard to, you know, be doing that. But yeah, we run them across the whole country, but in South Australia, two or three a year.
And so when you talk about mentor, how many mentors have you got there at the moment?
Hundreds. Hundreds of mentors are registered on Mentor Loop, the platform that we use, and mentees, which is really exciting. We're always open to more, but yeah, it's really amazing. And the events are always sold out. We usually have about 120 women in the room. It's just been an amazing way of coming back into South Australia 4 years ago and being able to just connect with all of these women. And one thing I've really found as I've immersed myself in the South Australian business world is people in SA are just legends. They are happy to help. And I think that's something that's really special to South Australia. And I know I talked earlier about how business was a bit different in Melbourne, but upon reflection, maybe it was really transactional. Whereas here, it's about those relationships. It is a partnership. How can I support you? How can you support me? And what good stuff can we do together? And I love that. I think it's really great.
Well, Cara, that has been a fantastic story. Thank you so much for your time today. I've very much loved having a chat to you and loved hearing your story. So thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
If you found this episode valuable, be sure to subscribe and stay updated whenever we post new episodes. Stay tuned on our socials for more captivating interviews, intriguing insights, and thought-provoking discussions. Together, let's navigate the ever-evolving world of business in South Australia. I'm Tim Lavis. Until next time, drive the change.